It confirms our key objective, the objective which is vital, that of continuing to have a mean temperature well below 2 degrees and to endeavour to limit that increase to 1.5 degrees.
From the UN Climate Summit in Paris in December last year. A historic event, historic agreement. 3 months on, well, it's short time frame, but the news is grim. The world is only getting warmer. Data released by NASA in this past week revealing February 2016 broke a century of global temperature records. Now, the figures show that the average global surface temperature in February was 1.35 degrees warmer than the average for that month, an extraordinary margin. The unprecedented speed which we seem to be heading towards that previously global agreed maximum of a 2 degree increase, that's even surprised climate scientists. There have been claims that we're now in something of an emergency. Have we passed the point where our actions can make a difference?
For all the effort that we're putting into trying to avoid increases of emission, we're losing. So what we're doing with solar and with wind and changing practices, behavioural practices and things like that, we're not winning the battle.
That's Alan Finkel. He's Australia's chief scientist with a confronting message. Is it now time to give up on arresting the progress of climate change? Is it time to throw the switch to adaptation rather than mitigation? Let's chew that over with Tim Flannery. He's the head of the Australian Climate Council, and Professor Jean Palutikoff, she's a director of the National Climate Change Adaptation Research Facility, joining us via Skype. Welcome to both.
Thank you.
Tim,
thank
you. Is Alan Finkel right? Is the battle lost?
The battle's not lost, but we are suffering from a decade now of worst-case scenario emissions. So for more than a decade, we've been tracking the worst case of the scientists. There is a huge volume of greenhouse gas pollution now in the atmosphere. In fact, there's enough, were we to put no more in, to take us pretty close to 1.5 degrees by the middle of the century. So I think we need three things. We certainly need to adapt to what is unavoidable. We need to reduce emissions hard and fast, starting right now, and we need to get some of that gas out of the air. And that sounds like a sort of sci-fi solution to some, but in fact, I think it is a reality, and in future will become a very important third way in our approach to dealing with the climate problem.
We'll get to that. That 1.5 mid-century that you talk about, I mean, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, that would have been seen as a calamitous outcome.
That's right. And we've been just building up to it silently without really acknowledging that that's been the case. And it chills my blood to think about it because, you know, that we're committed now really to that unless we can develop some new technologies to get some of that gas out of the air.
Gene, this huge rise that we saw in those temperatures for February, that global average, is that an aberration? Is that just too far off the chart? I mean, clearly we'll look again to March. The record will continue. But is this a statistical glitch?
Well, it's not a statistical glitch. We're in the middle of an El Nino event, and that always means warmer temperatures for Australia. So at the moment, you're adding the effect of global warming, which we're responsible for, to the effects of an El Nino, and that's delivering record high temperatures. So as the El Nino retreats, and it does already seem to be on the retreat, temperatures will become a little bit less above average, but so we'll go into a La Nina, which means lower temperatures for Australia, so we'll get a little bit cooler temperatures, but the next time we get an El Nino, which will be in 2 years or 5 years, or 7 years, you'll again get this additive effect of global warming plus an El Nino, and we can expect that the temperatures will in fact be even warmer than they are at the present time because the effects of global warming will be greater.
And Jean, what do you think of Alan Finkel's summary that this is a losing battle, or at least one that we're not engaging with sufficient vigour right now?
Oh, well, definitely. He's right. We're not, I don't know that it's a losing battle, but it's certainly a battle that we're not winning at the present time unless the governments step up and do more. We're going to continue to be running behind the game. We're going to be doing a certain amount of mitigation, as Tim has just described, but it simply isn't enough. They must do more. They came out of Paris with the Paris Agreement saying that this was a major success. But I think you really do have to question that, because the commitments that they made in Paris only deliver a temperature increase of 2.7 degrees by the end of the century, and we need something much better than that. We need to avoid the 1.5 in the middle of the century that Tim has just described, and we really need to seek to keep temperature increases below 2 degrees.
Tim Flannery, with things like Paris, we focus on these sort of bureaucratic arrangements. We console ourselves that we've done the work by at least getting together and talking. Australia's approach is almost an accountancy-led solution to the issue of this country's emissions. Do we really have in our public conversation an honest, genuine sense of the things that we need to do?
I think we do, but we are failing signally as a people to do them. And just to take one example, in the state of Victoria, I think, you know, the big problem for us is those old coal-fired power plants in the Latrobe Valley. They're no longer needed in the system, some of them. There's a 30% oversupply of electricity, right? They're blocking uptake of renewables. They are killing people. We know this, you know, taking life expectancies way down in the Latrobe Valley due to the particulate pollution that they're producing. And yet we have governments sitting on their backside doing nothing. The companies that run them have been asking for action. I mean, the head of AGL said, why don't you close down the most polluting by regulation or close down the oldest by regulation? We don't care as long as you get rid of some of this overcapacity. You know, so the polluters want it done, the public want it done, and the government's doing nothing.
And the blockage is what?
Oh, incompetency probably, or uncaring. I don't know what it is, but it's inexcusable, whatever it is.
Tim Flannery is the head of the Australian Climate Council. Professor Jean Polutikoff is director of the National Climate Change Adaptation Research Facility. And we're talking climate here on Sunday Extra on the back of those, well, confronting numbers for the month of February. Very, very hot. Hottest ever. Jean, does this begin to point us to, you know, an acceptance that a certain amount of change is utterly inevitable and that we need to find a way of adapting ourselves to that, our culture, our processes?
Yes, well, we do. It has to be at least a two-pronged approach. We have to reduce our emissions and claw back carbon dioxide from the atmosphere if we can, but we do need to adapt because we are committed. There's absolutely no doubt about it. I think really maybe the unfortunate thing is that we're horribly ingenious as a race, and we will find ways to adapt. What's not going to be so successful is our environment. The plants and the animals that we live with are just not as ingenious as we are, and they're going to find it very, very hard, if not impossible. And so there are going to be many extinctions, I think. And actually, yesterday I saw a tweet from Terry Hughes, who's at Townsville, who works on coral reefs, and they've been very anxious recently about the possibility of a major coral bleaching event on the Great Barrier Reef because of the El Nino plus global warming, which is giving unprecedentedly high ocean temperatures. Mm. And that bleaching event is now happening, and coral deaths are taking place along the Great Barrier Reef.
And perhaps, Tim, the sort of impasse that you talked to before about coal production, the power production in Victoria, I mean, that's based on sort of a political sense of this problem and where vested interests lie and what governments think can be got away with. Things like the death of the Great Barrier Reef are going to shift public opinion possibly in a positive and a serious way?
I think so. I would have thought that the deaths of our fellow citizens from these ancient polluting coal-fired power plants would be enough to shift us. We don't need to kill people to keep the lights on. We don't need to kill the Great Barrier Reef to do that. What we need is a concerted plan backed by the people to swiftly reduce those sources of emissions. It's what we've been calling for years. either our politicians are too incompetent to do that, or else they are corrupted by special interests.
So what do people do?
We need to get angry about it now. We're getting to the last stage where we can have action, really. The bigger this problem builds, the harder it is to solve. The next few years are going to tell. So I think we just need to get out there as a people and make ourselves heard. And if they're not going to shift, if they're not going to do what's right for the community, get rid of them. And I don't care whether they're polluters or companies, we need action now on this. We're beyond the point of just talking.
And yet, within the public conversation in this country, never mind others, but in our politics, this is not top of mind. Weeks can still pass in federal politics without climate rating a mention.
Well, that's right. We have this grand distraction, of all of these other things and all of the, talking Liberal, Labor, self-interest, all the rest of it goes on, and the public good isn't served. And I think people are generally aware of that as a problem. They see that things need to be done. They know they can be done cost-effectively. Australians are voting with their own wallets on this. I mean, we're putting solar panels on our houses at a greater rate than's happening in the US, We want it. But we're not getting the action.
The idea you mentioned at the beginning, and I'll bring you on this as well, Gene, but Tim, that idea of pulling carbon out of the system, I mean, what are some of the ways of going about that?
Well, we're at the very beginning of a long journey of investigating that question. I think it's now inevitable, in my view, that we'll have to do that. And there are ways it can be done. Concrete, for example, can be made using carbon-negative technology rather than polluting technology. We need a sectoral carbon price in the concrete area to foster those technologies. Planting trees is a great way of doing it. Unfortunately, the scale isn't there in terms of the scale of the problem for trees to be the only solution. But seaweed farming offers us a great option. If we covered 9% of the world's ocean in seaweed farms, we'd draw down all current pollution on an annual basis. So it's possible, but 9% is a big area.
With the conversation moving in that way, Gene, I mean, does that make sense of the changes being made, for example, at the CSIRO of pushing towards adaptation rather than actual research and monitoring of the phenomenon itself?
I do think that we need to maintain our capacity to understand just exactly how the climate is moving. I don't think we can just take it on trust that, yes, our climate is changing, so we need to do something about it. We need to know how, we need to know where, we need to know when, and we don't fully understand the processes. And if we're really going to address a problem, we need to know exactly how it works. So, no, I don't think that really it's very sensible to reduce our climate science capacity.
As a final point, Tim, I mean, how long do we have? Already an amount of this is irreversible, but in terms of maintaining a habitable and recognisable place to live in, how long do we have?
Well, look, that's
we have zero time to act. We have negative time to act. The real problem for this is that people don't see it. But we're building a problem for ourselves that's going to hit us and our children in a decade or two decades in a really very major form as we look at temperature increases, changes in extreme events, sea level rise. But because of the lags that are in the system, we don't see it and so we don't act. But we have negative time. We should be doing something right now. We should have done something.
Negative time, Tim Flannery?
Well, yeah, we live in a changed world already. I mean, the glacier that I climbed up to in Irianjaya, beautiful Karstens Glacier, the only glacier in the Australo-Papuan region, will melt away entirely in 2 to 3 years. I mean, that was seen by the first Dutch explorers there in the 17th century. It's been there for presumably millions of years. And yet the next 2 years or so, it's going to be gone. We already live in a changed world. And climate change is a process. That's the fact of the matter. It's difficult to adapt to a process where you don't know what the end point is. Mm. The most important adaptation we can make now is to adapt our energy system to be non-polluting. That is the single most important thing. And, of course, do common sense adaptations beyond that. But we need to start acting now if we want to avoid a process that ends up in a very nasty place for us.
Tim, thank you. Tim Flannery, author, scientist, founder, head of the Australian Climate Council, Director of the National Climate Change Adaptation Research Facility, Professor Gene Polukoff, with us as well.